Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. In today's episode, we spoke with David O'Malley, MD. Dr. O'Malley is a professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at The Ohio State University College of Medicine and the director of the Division of Gynecologic Oncology at The Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center James in Columbus, Ohio. In our exclusive interview, Dr. O'Malley discussed his approach to treatment selection and sequencing in platinum-resistant ovarian cancer, a disease setting he described as representing the highest unmet need in the field. He emphasized the central role of clinical trial enrollment and biomarker-driven decision-making, alongside practical patient-centered considerations such as infusion schedule and quality of life. So starting off, in patients with platinum-resistant ovarian cancer, how do you currently approach treatment selection and sequencing? What clinical or molecular features most strongly influence your decision-making?
First of all, platinum-resistant ovarian cancer is probably the highest unmet need that we have in ovarian cancer after curing more patients. So clinical trials. Okay, so I look for those opportunities. Those are tomorrow's therapies, today's. From a sequencing standpoint, if they're not eligible for clinical trial, you know, I look at molecularly based, do they have a positive biomarker? I talk with the patient about the infusion. You know, can they come in weekly versus that's really disruptive? Do they live 2 to 4 hours away? And then obviously looking at the efficacy, balancing with the quality of life, with the convenience of the infusion, and toxicity management is so important.
Now, with the recent momentum of ADCs in particular, how are you integrating those agents into practice? What patient selection criteria are critical, and where do you see these agents fitting?
It is a ADC world, but really we're not even close to where we're going to be. So what are those biomarkers which are available? We talked about clinical trials. However, what is available for us, folate receptor alpha. The NCCN guidelines support treatment down to 25%, though a positive result is considered 75% of the 2+ scoring. So folate receptor alpha for everybody. HER2 for everybody. We have the accelerated approval for 3+ HER2. However, the NCCN guidelines list as 2 and 3+. Saying that, breast cancer data is showing lower expression. We need more data in ovarian cancer. And then obviously next generation sequencing, which we don't have specific markers for yet, but I continue to look for those clinical trials. And if I have centralized testing, which allows a patient to go on, I send that early on so I know that result. So if they have access to it, they can move on. Now, the payload becomes essential to me. If it's a topo one payload outside of clinical trials, because we don't have data about topo one payload after topo one payload in ovarian cancer. So I'm only utilizing topo one payload ADCs once, antimicrotubulin payloads once. But if they have the same target in different payloads, I will utilize the same target if they have different payloads. I get asked that question all the time. Right now, we're doing that. We need more data about topo one payloads after topo one payloads with different targets. And we really need to see data, which we don't have at this point.
Now, based on what you said about the NCCN criteria in terms of cutoffs for these biomarkers, why do you think they were more liberal?
Well, it's based on data. We have two papers in the literature with regards to folate receptor alpha going down to 25%. I'm honored to be the corresponding senior author on those, but we don't have large trials. There's lots of reason for that. One of which is, remember that the agent was owned by, you know, smaller biotech companies. So they were limited in how much they could develop it beyond folate receptor alpha, greater than 75%. When we look at the PanDestiny-02 trial in HER2, expression. Remember that all of those patients had to have centralized positivity of 2 or 3+, but when it was sent centrally, they had to have local. But when it was sent centrally, those were reread, and we saw 0, 1, and 2+ across ovarian cancer, as well as all other GYN cancers, with similar overall response rate. We're seeing it in breast cancer. So really, we need more of that data to differentiate. 3+ seems to be differentiated. You could argue in folate receptor alpha, greater than 75% differentiated. But how much does that drop off from that 25 to 75%? How much does that drop off to 1 to 2+ on HER2 is yet not known. But saying that, we see activity across those expression levels, which I just mentioned.
Outside of folate receptor alpha, what other emerging biomarkers are most promising in guiding therapy in the platinum-resistant setting? And are there any that you believe should already be incorporated into routine clinical testing?
I don't believe at this time biomarker testing should be incorporating routine clinical testing outside of HER2 and folate receptor alpha. However, with the number of agents which are being developed with specific targets, Claudin-6, TROP2, NaPi2b, PTK7, I mean, all of those in time, I believe, will have an understanding if the response rate and outcomes are differentiated. Many clinical trials right now are enrolling all comers, but what does that data show and what does the approvals ultimately look like is going to be very important how we make clinical decisions. If we only want to or are able to treat with one TOPO1 payload, that will become very important for us to make the best decision for our patient when we have those values.
Now, these options that we're talking about are monotherapies. What, in your opinion, what other combination strategies are showing the most promise in overcoming resistance? And what do we understand about the underlying resistance biology driving platinum resistance?
So the combination strategies, I mean, the most obvious one, in full disclosure, I've done that work, which is MIRV-BEV, right? Now, that most likely is not synergistic. That's additive. But what do we see? We see possibly slightly increased risk of overall response rate, but our duration seems to be prolonged, like often when we add BEV to our combinations. So how do we overcome those resistance? We're not there yet. We're just switching our payloads, but the combination, you know, is it immune therapy? Is it, you know, we have, you're looking at in cervix cancer, TV, you know, using Pembro. So I think all of those are potential, but how do we develop them? So with BEV in the first line and the second line, okay, we haven't seen very many trials in the platinum resistance combined with BEV. I think we're going to start seeing some. So to me, that's the low-hanging fruit. The next generation of IO therapy may be an option. The combination of different ADCs, maybe that's the answer, particularly if we have payloads which are different. They really need to be different for toxicity standpoint. But we haven't done much of that. And I really like to see more partnerships and more agents which we're able to, and potentially some innovation in our regulatory strategy, which doesn't allow such, doesn't force a such an emphasis on the individual agents and the contribution of the benefit, if we're really making a difference, particularly in early phase trials. And I think when we look at the drivers of resistance, really our understanding continues to be elementary in so many ways. Even when we look at specific, like TOPO1, can those patients be retreated? And the escape mechanism and cross resistance, there's some data on PARP inhibitor resistance and potentially cross resistance to platinum, which makes some sense. So we still really don't have as strong of an understanding of those drivers of resistance as we should. And why is that? Unfortunately, we're not getting as many biopsies to answer those questions. So when we look at these different drivers of resistance, our understanding, again, is elementary. However, we have some principles that we continue to stick with. You know, platinum until not eligible for platinum. I will continue to treat platinum until they become refractory. Now, it's a little bit different with the way clinical trials are designed right now, but very important. And really, we're going to do the same, I suspect, with ADCs. So those clinical questions are more important than the preclinical work, but the preclinical work will establish at least the hypothesis that ultimately needs to be shown in our patients who receive these agents.
And then shifting to a different therapeutic class, checkpoint inhibitors have had modest activity in ovarian cancer overall, but data from KEYNOTE-B96 have changed that. What are the next steps that could expand its role?
I think the next generation of immune therapies, now that we have additional data beyond Cytoxan Bev Pembro, which was a single arm study, modest activity, though interesting. And now look in the B96 with survival advantage. Now we have survival advantage, right? So I think when we look at this, how are we going to expand the next generation, the bispecifics, right? That to me is as we improve the technology, as we understand immune modulatory effects, which are active within ovarian cancer, and how to better partner. Did B96 work? Because the backbone of weekly paclitaxel kept disease controlled for long enough to educate the immune system, to allow for the immune system then to contribute. It's one of the hypotheses. So as we improve our immune interventions, I believe we'll have a greater expansion of those treatments.
Looking ahead, which ongoing or recently reported trials are most likely to change the treatment landscape in this setting? And are there any novel targets or platforms that you find particularly compelling?
We are seeing so much early phase data to include expansion cohorts that are, phase one with expansion cohorts. Folate receptor ADCs, very exciting, right? I mentioned some of the other NaPi2b, TROP2, Claudin-6, CDH6. I think when we're looking at that data, there appears to be a 50% plus or minus 5% overall response rate with TOPO1 payloads across most of those agents. Now, we're starting to see some hints 60 plus percent in certain subgroups. Is that truly differentiated, or is that just variability in smaller trials? And are there expression levels which will impact that to our earlier discussion with regards to the amount of expression and the biomarker prediction? However, we need agents beyond ADCs. Right? Because ADCs are most likely going to move to the earlier lines of therapy, first line and platinum sensitive. So some of our DDR mechanisms, our DNA repair mechanisms, when we're looking at these agents, if it is WEE1 or CDK2 inhibitors, for example, they're being developed with phase three trials. The post-ADC innovation is just starting, and we are going to continue to have opportunities to improve the outcomes of patients. And what else? How about retreat with ADCs? We need to find these TOPO1s. Can we retreat? But if we retreat TOPO1, we got antimicrotubulin. And then what's the next generation of payloads which are going to be differentiated? Or how about we put two payloads or two targets together? That is, as our technology improves, we're truly going to be able to have personalized therapy for our patients based on the molecular. And we're going to understand heterogeneity. We're going to understand resistance much more, I believe, maybe not resistance, but heterogeneity that will ultimately lead to better outcomes for our patients. Hopefully, as we move into first line, curing more patients.
If we're looking at dual targets, doesn't that also run the risk of added toxicity?
Dual targets, bispecifics absolutely increase our risk of toxicities. Okay. However, if we look at anti-microtubulin plus topo-1s, those side effects do not seem to be overlapping. So if we can provide payloads, which the toxicities are not overlapping, that is maybe our greatest opportunity. Balancing also the delivery with dual targets would potentially also increase our efficacy while hopefully managing or minimizing, I should say, minimizing our side effect profile. But you're right, dual payloads, we have to keep that in mind for those reasons. And again, the bispecifics and some of the cytokine releasing syndrome and all the other challenges that we have. So I think as we look at these options of dual targets, dual payloads, or maybe we just do keep it simple and bring two ADCs together. Wouldn't that be nice?
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.